This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
WOGL HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. The revolution will be broadcast.
This is the next generation of talk. Now, on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, Rich Zeoli.
Democrat John Fetterman has taken Black Lives Matter off of his website. Why would he do that? The United States candidate, the Senate candidate, why would he take Black Lives Matter off of his website? We'll talk about that. 855-839-1210 and on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. And that's where you should end the music, right there, Henry. Right there after that. We'll do it. We'll get there. Don't worry. It is the first show back in Afternoon Drive. Mario from Bucks County wanted to call in. Mario, my friend, good afternoon.
Richie Rich, how you doing?
What's up, buddy?
Welcome
thanks for
back
calling.
To the afternoon.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, welcome
thank
back
thank
to
you.
Yeah, I've been a long time listener, man. Just want to say good luck going back to afternoons. You know, it's where you belong, and hope everything's good with your fam.
Thank you, pal. Listen, you are the official first call in Afternoon Drive. Congratulations.
Dude, I love it.
I've you want a Zeoli Army bumper sticker? What's that?
Of course.
All right.
I said I've tried to call in a bunch of times before, but I can never get through. So this is great.
All right. Listen, I'm going to put you on hold. We'll get your address. We'll send you a bumper sticker, all right?
All right, man. Sounds good. Hey, quick question for you. It's a little weird that some of the bits are staying with the morning show, but what about the sponsors? Because I just got a new roof.
Emmons is staying with me. Don't worry.
Awesome.
All right.
They did a great job, man.
Did they? Great. I'm glad to hear that. I'll pass that along to them.
All right, take care, brother.
Thanks, Mario. Appreciate it very much. We'll put him on hold. Yeah, Emmons Roofing and Siding, my official roof sponsor. They are staying with us. But I have a guest I'm very, very excited to welcome to the show. I'm excited to have this conversation. Dr. Wilfred Riley is professor of political science at Kentucky State University, author of Taboo, 10 Facts You Can't Talk About. Professor, recently you talked about a requiem for Black Lives Matter. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Glad to be on.
I noticed right now that you did some extensive research on Black Lives Matter as an organization and what the overall effect was. Was it a positive effect? Was it a negative effect? And you found some very interesting things. So tell us about your research.
Yeah, so myself and a guy named Bob Maranto at the University of Arkansas, another guy named Pat Wolf, actually wrote a professional academic paper where we looked at kind of the aftermath of the Black Lives Matter movement. And a couple of publications, Spiked UK, which I write for pretty regularly, Commentary, so on, asked me to kind of talk about the short version of what we found in their pages. And basically, the piece is titled A Requiem for Black Lives Matter. And what I found was that Black Lives Matter didn't accomplish much of anything for ordinary Black Americans, much less Americans of other colors. I mean, I'm a writer on kind of the political right, and I wasn't too surprised by that. But again, the data just is what it is. And I think a lot of people were a little stunned. The piece got a fair amount of attention. But just at the most basic level, if you look at police shootings, which was BLM's whole thing, between 2015 and 2021, you find that the things they suggested, like pulling back the cops in the most dangerous areas in less crime surge, and if it did, sending them back in, those didn't reduce police violence at all. So, I mean, last year, if I have this correct, you had 1,051 fatal police shootings. That includes unarmed men, Black people, so on down the line. When BLM began in 2014, you only had about 900 similar shootings. There's never been, this is another big element of this, there's never been a big problem with the police just gunning down unarmed, innocent people in the USA. There are about 60 million police interactions every year. So on that front, I mean, the black number, unarmed black men, is down by like 3. But I mean, there hasn't been a substantial change at all. And on the other hand, what we've seen is a big surge in crime. So, I mean, murders, again, when BLM started 2014, you're looking at about 14,164 murders per year. Right now, I mean, the past 2 years, we've had more than 20,000, more than 21,000 murders. So we're getting back to these sort of crack era levels of violence because we've taken money from the police. We've taken good cops off the streets, so on down the line.
Yeah, no, this is amazing. You say the post-BLM picture of America and the trends in street crime is quite simple. Serious crime has skyrocketed in recent years. The most reliable annual crime data are the homicide figures. And as you found out, including Jason Johnson, police researcher and president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund, has found out that the United States tallied more than 20,000 murders in 2020. Highest total since 1995 and 4,000 more than 2019. I mean, I'm broadcasting right here in Philadelphia, Dr. Riley. We just surpassed 1,000 carjackings, over 400 homicides. We had a shooting the other day, a terrible tragedy at a school where some guys in SUVs came over and gunned down some of the football players, which I'm sure was gang-related shootings. It's happening in every city in America right now, and it's also spreading into the suburbs as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have forgotten, because we haven't seen this for 15, 20 years, what crime looks like if you don't let the police do their job in these concentrated big cities. I mean, America's second or third largest country in the world after China and India. So, I mean, places like New York City used to see 2,000 to 3,000 homicides in a year. And, I mean, I remember when I was in high school, a guy on the football team whose name was Lee Ambrose just had to put the name Lee on his jersey because the Ambrose are a well-known Chicago street gang. And at this point, like 94, 95, 96, we thought he would get shot if he went to games with his full name on. This is what you were actually seeing when you mentioned the football situation for many, many years. I mean, most of us probably remember the trains, the buildings covered in graffiti. And in the late 90s, there actually was an approach, it's called broken windows policing, that targeted this, where the idea was, by any means necessary, we're going to stop all this crime. So we saw a lot of crimes. Murder, again, dropped from 25 plus per year down to 14,000 in the modern era. We saw crime cut by about half. And the simple reality, putting aside some of the wordy academic nonsense, is that if we, kind of to protect black Americans or whatever the idea is, cut police budgets by a third and cut police stops by half, we're basically going to see the same type of crime we used to in, you know, the New Jack City era, the That One Movie Kids era. So hopefully we won't do that. I think social media might play a role here. Like when you see mobs looting, you know, entire convenience stores and so on in real time, it's harder for maybe more left-leaning voices at the local paper to say, well, no, there's nothing like that going on. So I don't think we're going to go all the way back, but definitely during the George Floyd era, we didn't see a reduction in crime or an improvement in race relations, to put it politely.
And you have no problem calling out the fact that these policies endorsed by groups like Black Lives Matter. I mean, I got a 7-minute clip of Democrats saying defund the police. They're all trying to walk this back. They're all trying to say, oh, they never met it. They never meant it. They never said it. But they're also doing stupid things, like in Philadelphia, for example. Cops can no longer stop somebody if their license plate is covered up. So there's all these little traffic kind of issues that police can no longer stop a motorist for. And you point out in your research that when you have cops no longer allowed to actually even pull over cars and things like this, you're going to have higher rates of crime. When you get rid of the policies that enable the police to be able to actually find the people who are committing the crimes, and then there's something else too, and that's the prosecution aspect of this. We got this district attorney here in Philly. This guy's a total Marxist. I mean, he really does believe the criminals are the victims, and so they'll get arrested for having illegal guns, but they'll be back on the streets the next day. Prosecutions for illegal guns are way down in the city of Philadelphia. So that's the other thing. You got the one problem of saying defund the police, and the other in saying that we need to have progressive policies by district attorneys that essentially make jail a revolving door.
Yeah, that's a good point. The two go together. I think it's a Krasner you guys have out there in Philly.
Larry Krasner, yep.
Yep, the OG. I mean, he's known around the country negatively in my field of research. You know, I'm from Chicago and live in Louisville, so we have very, very similar issues. And again, a lot of these district attorneys are, I mean, elected by majority vote at the local level. So I don't think this will become like the 70s where this goes on for a period of years, if not decades, but it's definitely going on right now. And one point you made there when you said, look, it was the left wing of the two political parties that was talking about defunding the police, and that's a real thing they said. You are seeing a lot of this 360-degree triple axle kind of BS that politicians like to do right now. But yeah, the New York Times ran an editorial called "Yes, We Mean Literally Defund the Police." You know, I printed all this stuff out and have it in my office because nowadays even the words on websites can change and so on. But yes, that's absolutely something. It was a mainstream position on the political left. I mean, the city of Minneapolis said they were going to get rid of their entire police department and reconstitute it as, I think the name is the Social Work and Public Safety Force. You know, all the Democratic members of Congress put on Ghanaian-style kente cloth and knelt in front of a picture of George Floyd in prayer. Like, these are real things that happened, and they are the things that caused what you're seeing now. So don't be gaslit. I mean, the Republicans have their problems, too. But just like it's fair to blame the GOP on a health care situation, it's absolutely fair to say that the people who said they were going to defund the police and then did are the people that are responsible for crime. And Krasner he's one of many examples of that. You know, the Soros-funded, but more specifically, like NGO and general-funded prosecutors around the country. One final quick line there. One thing you said when you described Krasner as a Marxist is interesting, because the whole idea of Marxism and of all the wokeness that's downstream from that is that if you are failing, by definition, that's proof someone else is at fault, because, you know, all people and groups are exactly equal, blank slate, all of that. So to someone like Krasner, if someone is a criminal, that means someone else out there is a racist. And the real goal is to go lock up the racist, not the criminal. And I think that's BS. I mean, rich people have a very high level of crime, honestly, if you look at drugs and so on. So some people are just bad and enjoy partying, and you need a place for those people to go.
Yeah, it sounds like a good time.
Well, I mean, I was a fairly bad person who enjoyed partying when I was a young man, but if I got in a brawl or I got caught with a bag or something, I mean, my understanding from a working class neighborhood in Chicago is very much like, the cops are going to kind of roughly put you in the car. You're going to go downtown. You're not going to like explain that to your dad, your mom. That's the incentive to not do that. If you remove the incentive, do people like to fight and hook up in public? Yes. But a city cannot allow that. And I mean, when you look, and I'm having fun, we're bantering, but when you look at like Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, and these are very diverse cities, by the way, not the stereotypical slum communities. But, I mean, you see literal Hoovervilles of people sleeping on the streets, like just mugging business women at random and so on. That's no exaggeration. And as a leader, you sort of can't allow that. You can be as sympathetic as possible to people with drug issues, but the idea of allowing a tent city across from your courthouse can't be one of your options in terms of how to handle that.
2 points I want to make, what you just said. Number one, I don't think it's ever okay for anybody to ever hook up in public. We don't need public displays of affection. So that's number one. Not necessarily we need prosecutions over it, but let's just as human decency, Dr. Riley, just human decency, all right? Nobody needs to see that.
Well, sure, get ideally, yeah, we should be. Okay.
Number two, and this is the other point I want to mention. There's a political liability with all this, is there not? Because I'm seeing right now, for example, John Fetterman, who's running for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania, who's been very much about releasing criminals from prison. He's removed the Black Lives Matter section from his campaign website. And, you know, James Carville came out and said the stupidest words ever uttered in the English language were defund the police. So I have to think, as a lot of these victims, as you point out in your research, are Black. You know, a lot of the victims of the violence in these cities are Black and brown people. I got to think now that it's become a major political liability for Democrats to embrace these various groups.
Yes, and this is also a major problem for race relations. So, I mean, the actual data on this is pretty astonishing. Like, when I was a kid, I mentioned where I'm from, and crime had no racial association. There were fairly high crime rates for Italian Americans, Black Americans, Irish Americans, Mexican Americans. You know, not to single those four groups out, but all were well represented in the blotter. Now, that's not really the case because of the de-emphasis on policing and specifically urban areas with big Black populations. So, I mean, in the modern era, the Black percentage of murder victims has gone from about 25% to about 65%. Like, as of last year, 60% of the people that were killed in gangland murders and other murders domestic murders may not be on that list, but we're black, happen to be black. Well over 50% of all murder victims were black. So I think, one, that hurts race relations, where the idea becomes perhaps a heavily black city like Memphis or Detroit simply is not safe, however beautiful and pleasant it might be. But also, at the most basic level, if you call your movement Black Lives Matter, and the effect of your movement is that 10,000 black people are mowed down by gunfire every year. To put that in context, I mean, there were about 5,000 people lynched in the USA all time, and more than a third of them were white. So if you're seeing these incredible murder tolls, it's a lot of people are going to start noticing that, I think. So, yeah, the letters BLM may well be kind of untouchable in a couple of years from a political standpoint. And I think what you're going to see with these Democrats is, again, sort of an interesting dance where people – the whole thing will be forgotten, kind of. We're starting to see this in the big cities with COVID lockdowns. People will say things like, well, no one ever supported that. And it'll become kind of an awkward archaeological, you know, technique to ask the question of, well, how did it happen then for 4 years?
Yeah. I think you're exactly right. They'll all start saying, yeah, we wanted our kids in school, too. We didn't want the school shut down. They're already trying to play that game as well. Dr. Riley, this was excellent. I really appreciate your time today. Dr. Wilfred Riley, professor of political science at Kentucky State University and author of Taboo, 10 Facts You Can't Talk About. I'm going to post a link to A Requiem for Black Lives Matter. What an excellent piece and an excellent interview. I really appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
Sounds good. Hope to talk again. Bye.
And I want to tell you about my friends at USA Insulation, because I know the last thing you want to think about is winter, but this weather stinks today. I mean, this whole weekend stinks, and it's freezing out right now. I don't know what's going on. I wish I had one of John Fetterman's hoodies, because I'm freezing. I would never want to touch one of his hoodies. Can you imagine how gross those things are? But I'm cold is my point. So you know it's going to be a very, very cold winter. And I just saw that in New Jersey, for example. Electricity rates, they just approved an increase of 25%. So now is the time to get your home ready with USA Insulation. When most people think of their insulation, you might think of your attic, but attic insulation alone is not enough to combat a very, very tough winter. It's like going out to shovel snow. You just got a hat on, no coat. You need USA premium foam insulation in your walls. It's what we did in our home. They install the insulation neatly from the outside. It gets into places that other insulations can't. The cold air stays out, the warm air stays in, and your furnace runs less, which helps tremendously against these rising energy costs. Now, speaking of energy costs, you can get insulated right now, get energy savings right now, and you don't have to make a payment for 2 years, and that's interest-free. So winterproof your home now with USA Insulation. Get insulated now, and you don't have to make a payment for 2 years. 1-800-USA-FOAM. That's 1-800-USA-FOAM or usainsulation.net.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
It is Monday, October 3rd. Thanks for being here today. My return to afternoon drive. I really appreciate you being with us this afternoon. A lot to discuss and a lot of fun, too, we're going to have in the next years to come right here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. So thank you for being here. It was great to hear Nick this morning. He did a great job on his debut show of Kale and Company, along with Greg Stocker and Dawn Stensland. And I miss them all very, very much. But Nick was doing a great job and doing great interaction during Dawn's news, and they had a lot of fun. So make sure you tune in to Kale and Company tomorrow morning right here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Now, we're not going to do an hour of nonstop talk here on the afternoon drive show, but we're going to do 45-ish minutes of nonstop talk, which will be coming up at 4:35-ish. Everything's ish because I don't follow directions. I don't do my breaks on time. I skip over live reads. I don't prep. I don't use a show sheet. So all of that is going to have to be right. So everything's ish around here. You know what I mean? Like we're normally going to do the movie mystery clip right around this time, but we messed that up. So we'll do that later, but then it might be this time tomorrow. We're just going to roll with it. All right. We're going to roll with the punches. That's all we're going to do. We'll be flexible, right? We'll be flexible. Like John Fetterman's flip-flopping. We'll be flexible. Or Joe Biden's use of the English language. We'll be flexible. Here's a little bit of Joe Biden talking about President Kamala Harris. We have this one from some stupid White House event that they had with Doug, the first gentleman, Doug Emhoff, or whatever his name is, and the president acknowledging once again who really wears the pants in this relationship, the pantsuit. Take a listen.
Kamala won't be the last woman to be vice president or president.
She won't be the last woman to be vice president or president, which acknowledges what we've all known. She's really the president. And we are really, really screwed. Wow. That's not the best Joe Biden gaffe, though. He also had another one, too, where he was yelling about telling Republicans to come at me. You like this one? This is Biden yelling. This maybe you have this one. Again, we're getting our sea legs here. It's all right. We got this one here. Go ahead. Take a listen.
I know I'm being banged up by the Republicans, but come bring it on.
Bring it on. It's what I told Corn Pop, too. Bring it on. And Corn Pop was a bad dude. And I said, bring it on. He's just yelling again. Mr. Civility right there. Not. I know Republicans are banging up on me, but I want to heal this country. I want to unite this country, bring people together. No, bring it on. Come on, Jack. I'll meet you out in the parking lot. We'll settle this Scranton style, where I lived till I was 8 and then moved to Delaware. We'll settle this Wilmington style, old school style. Jack, bring it on.
Bring it on.
Mr. The Grand Unifier, bring it on.
No, I'm being banged up by the Republicans, but come bring it on.
Yeah, come on. I'm going to fight you. I'll fight you. I'll fight you. I'll fight everybody. My dad always said, Joey, don't you let them get away with it. You fight them. You fight them here. You fight them everywhere. The great unifier, Joe Biden. Didn't he tell America he was going to essentially try to unify and heal our country? Wasn't that a thing he said at one point? I'm pretty sure it was, right? Now it's let me kick your butt in the parking lot. I'll beat you down. Yeah, the great unifier, Joe Biden. New Jersey is having a major battle over sex education standards. And I have to tell you that as a dad with a second grader, a kindergartner, and a now preschool baby, Reagan, baby Reagan, who's 2.5, and she goes to her little preschool program just to get a little socialization. She does a great job, a couple hours a week. But I'm very, very nervous about what they want to teach our kids. And King Philip the Unaccountable, Governor Phil Murphy, who is a king, a wannabe king anyway, he's now doing something that is typical political retribution style. On the New Jersey State Board of Education, there's a couple of members of the Board of Ed who have opposed his draconian policies to start teaching our kids what a vulva is in second grade. And to start telling kids that even though you might be born a girl, you might actually be a boy. So several members of the New Jersey State Board of Education opposed that nonsense, the indoctrination of our children, the sexualization of our children. So what does the king do? Tries to whack them. Phil Murphy is going after each and every one of those members, including my buddy Andy Mulvihill, who is the vice president of the New Jersey State Board of Education, for daring to stand up for sanity with our children. So I don't know about you, but I do not want my kids learning this crap in the classroom. And what happened is that the state of New Jersey came out and said, you have to teach the kids this curriculum. A lot of schools said, hell no, we're not doing it. We're not teaching our kids this stuff. And so what you need to do as a parent right now is you need to find out what is being taught in your kids' school. Because, and I got to give you earmuffs here, according to the New Jersey Department of Education, all eighth graders should know the definitions of, and again, earmuffs, if the kids are there. But you got to know this because this is what they're talking about. Vaginal, oral, and anal sex, and identify short and long-term contraception by eighth grade. Now, the fact that I'm uncomfortable saying that on the radio should tell you everything you need to know about why this is wrong. In fifth graders are supposed to learn about romantic and sexual feelings, pleasuring one's own body, mood swings, and the timing of puberty by fifth grade. By the end of the second grade, students should understand the ways people express their gender and how gender role stereotypes may limit behavior. Now, none of this is appropriate for our kids at any age, but certainly not these ages. And you as a parent should have the ability to get your kids out of there, but it's a very difficult process. So what needs to happen is we need to stand up and say no to this. But every time a Board of Education member on the state level has said no to this, well, now the governor wants them gone, wants to whack them. So I'll give you more details on that as the show progresses as well. But we have an hour of nonstop, almost an hour-ish, 45 minutes-ish, some amount of time-ish. Somebody get a watch. We'll clock it in coming up here on the show. But I will be back at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, my happy place, for my first official live event back in Afternoon Drive coming up on October 28th. And I could not be more excited because the Grand Hotel is truly a beautiful, magnificent resort right on the ocean, right there. Beautiful Cape May, New Jersey, one of my favorite towns. Cape May, you're going to love it there. If you've never been, this time of year is great. October, November, December, and they've got great midweek packages for you. And all packages include two adults and two children. You get 10% off rack rates plus a resort credit of up to $200. Now, you can use your resort credit right on site at the restaurant, the boutique. It's a great hotel. In fact, it's voted number one in the entire state of New Jersey via brides.com for beachfront weddings. So give my friends Kellyanne and Caitlin a call to book your dream wedding or any other events you want to have. Baby showers, bridal showers. They can do family reunions, special events, bring the team back together for a corporate retreat. You can do it at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. Just call my friends Kellyanne and Caitlin today. Go to GrandHotelCapeMay.com. GrandHotelCapeMay.com. And we'll see you there live Friday, October 28th. Mark your calendar for our live broadcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
Thanks for taking the Zioli Show with you. Rich Zioli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Welcome back. It is Monday, the Monday edition of my return to Afternoon Drive. Thanks for being here. 855-839-1210 and on Twitter at Rich Zioli. So, you know, as I was looking at all the news of the day today, and there's quite a bit of it, one of the biggest things that steps out in front of me right now is the absolute insanity that is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Now, remember something about AOC. She is the leader of the squad. That is the kooky left, a bunch of, broads or chicks, because that would be sexist, and that's something Bernie Sanders would say. So I'll just say a bunch of kooky Democrats who are all about taking over America. And that's what they really believe. AOC is the leader of the squad, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's a bartender. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but she got a little bit of power, a little taste of power, and she loves it. And she will run for president someday. No doubt about that. She's very dangerous. You have to realize this. Very dangerous. Don't mistake her what appears to be stupidity, which absolutely, I'm not doubting that. But I'm saying don't mistake that for her lack of ambition. Because a lot of people who've been, well, let's just say this, not the brightest bulb in the lighthouse, have wound up becoming very powerful and dangerous. History is rife with it. Big examples of this throughout history. And the biggest threat that AOC is, and what she represents, like Bernie Sanders too, number one is this concept where America has to atone for itself. America has to atone for all the evils that we've done around the world. America's a bad place, bad people. And we've done some bad things. Now we got to pay a price. And they believe this. And they believe our policy should reflect this. They also believe in taking your money and giving it to other people in ways that we have not even dreamt of yet. They do. They believe that as well. And they believe in spending lots and lots of money on climate change, which you're not going to stop by spending money on it. But they believe in spending it because for them, it's about destroying capitalism. The best way I can say this would be if you can think of climate change policy as a way to completely take capitalism and stop it dead in its tracks, you'll understand their mindset here. That's what they want to do. The people that get screwed the most for this are poor people. They always are. They always were. People that hurt the most with policies that the left advocates tend to be the poor people. Even though the left always says we're for them, their policies reflect anything but. But AOC also wants you to know the kind of birth control that she uses as well. And this is very, very important if you want to throw up in your mouth on your drive home from work. So, sorry. I just want... It's Matt DeSantis there. Caught him off guard. He wasn't expecting that. Take a listen to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the leader of the squad.
I think it's important to state that that abortion is an economic issue. Forcing poor and working class people to give birth against their will, against their consent, against their ability to provide for themselves or a child is a profound economic issue, and it's certainly a way to keep a workforce basically conscripted to large-scale employers and to employers to work more against their will, to take second and third jobs against their desire and their own autonomy. And so the idea that that abortion and access to abortion is somehow not a profound and central economic and class issue and class struggle is certainly something that I think a person who's never had to contend with the ability to carry a child, it belies that perspective. Since Republicans are forcing this conversation in uncomfortable ways, then I will meet them to it. I have an IUD. I've had one for years. Now, IUDs, if an IUD fails and results in an ectopic pregnancy...
Let's stop it right there. And before I unpack this, which, by the way, I know you were hoping that she was going to say an IUD like the kind they found on the roadside in Iraq. No, she's talking about the birth control kind, but I'll get there in a moment. Let's think about what she just said about people are forced against their will to have children and they'll be conscripted to work for these big corporations and blah, 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 blah. AOC was one of the champions of the vaccine mandate. Now, many people lost their jobs, their livelihoods, their businesses, their ability to serve our country because they did not want to be vaccinated. She didn't seem to care about them and the fact that they would lose their economic livelihood and may have to go do something else with their time and their job. She didn't give a damn about those people because she believed that you should not have bodily autonomy. Democrats do not believe in bodily autonomy, period, except when it comes to abortion. That's it. The only time they will ever support the idea, the notion that it's your body, your choice, is when you talk about having an abortion, period. When you talk about what you eat, what you drink, whether you get a shot or not. No. Bodily autonomy out the window. You do what we say when we say to do it. That's number one. Number two, who is having children against their will? Who in this country is forced to have children against their will? I'm not even talking about the fact, just the fact that pregnancy, for the most part, is a choice. Of course, unless there's a rape or something like that. But most states that even have strict abortion laws allow exceptions for that. But that goes to something which is a bigger point. At what point are we going to have abortion illegal in every single state in the country after a certain period of time? Probably never. I mean, look, I'm pro-life. I have two beautiful kids who came to us vis-a-vis adoption. But I'm also a realist, and I understand that those states that are California and New York and New Jersey and these other blue wacko lefty states are never, ever, ever going to ban abortion. They're never going to. And the courts have said this is a states' rights issue. So again, who in this country is being forced to become a parent against their will? Nobody. Nobody's ever forced to be a parent against their will. And you also have the option of course, placing your child into adoption. See, I love how the left thinks the only choice is you either kill it or then you're going to be suffering a life of indentured servitude as you're conscripted to go work for the corporations and everything else. I mean, hear her talk. It's exactly what she's saying. As if there's not another option, as if placing your child for adoption, giving it to the loving arms of a mom and dad who would be so happy to be able to raise this child and care for it, is just something that never crosses their mind. And you notice she never even says that. But again, if parenthood comes with basically shackles and chains, which shackle you to the corporation, to the big corporations, and take away your freedom and your autonomy, making you a conscript or whatever the hell she's talking about, well, then you have the option after birth to place that child in adoption. You do. Now, look, if she's talking about just the pain of labor, yeah, that unfortunately doesn't go away with adoption. That's true. If you're talking about the 9 months that you got to go through of, you know, not being able to really do certain things, drinking alcohol and smoking and that sort of thing, if you want to, yeah, Oh, true, true. You should not do those things if you want to place a child for adoption too. But otherwise, if her point, if her thesis here, not that she knows what a thesis is, but if her thesis here is that parenthood will make women into slaves, you don't have to be a parent. You can carry that baby to term and then place the baby to adoption, just like we were so blessed to be able to have Patrick and Claire into our lives. You have the option to do that. But they don't want to mention that option, do they? Never. No, because they lie, and they lie, and they advance this idea that without abortion, women will be handmaids. And they'll be in the handmaid's tale outfits every day going to work on the farm or in the warehouse for little to no money. And that's the other little secret socialist, little lefty, little piece she just gave out there, too. They'll be underpaid because women are underpaid, and they'll be treated as slaves, and they won't have any value, and they won't matter anymore. I mean, there's a lot to unpack with that lunacy, but that's basically it. And therein lies the socialist handbook, really, truly, that certain groups of people are nothing more than chattel to the big evil capitalists who prey on them every day. And abortion is a way out of that. Abortion is a way out. It's also fascinating, too, how there will always be states that will allow it, but that's never okay for the left. They want every state to allow it. The idea that you may have to leave one state to go to another, oh, no, that's something they can't even comprehend. Oh, my God, you might have to travel? You might have to actually travel to another state to have that procedure. They could not even imagine that. Yet, if a state said during COVID, we were not going to have a vaccine mandate, they would scream and they would say, your policies affect everyone. Your policies hurt people in this state and that state. Oh, yeah, no, it's only when it comes to the issue of bodily autonomy, or I should say to abortion, that Democrats give a damn about bodily autonomy. They're the biggest hypocrites and frauds on it. I saw a billboard the other day on 95 as I'm driving, and it said, and I saw this, and maybe you saw this too, it was a picture of a cow. And it wasn't one of the Chick-fil-A cows, you know, those cool cows that paint and talk about how, you know, you should always eat chicken and that sort of thing. No, this was a cow picture, and it said, Mayor Kenny, enough suffering, climate change, blah, 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 pass a meat tax today. A meat tax. Now, here in Philadelphia, we have a sugary beverage tax. Years ago, little Michael Bloomberg in New York was one of the first to kind of champion this thinking, where he banned the size of big gulps. You remember this? You can only have a certain size drink. Anything over that was going to kill people, you know? So Philadelphia then puts in a sugary tax, which they now have. And now it doesn't go far enough for the left. They want a meat tax for climate change. And I'm going to tell you right now, and mark my words, and you can write this down, because you know, I tend to be right with this stuff. You can say, all right, Zioli said it at 4:47 p.m. There will be a meat tax at some point. 100%. The left will absolutely, they hate the idea of cows. Cows toot, and you know, it's funny too, because my Reagan now, she's 2.5, and she's funny. I go, Reagan, what's going on over there? She goes, I tooted, Daddy. It's hysterical, and it still makes me laugh. It really does. Well, cow toots apparently cause all kinds of problems for the environment, so says the left, and they want a meat tax so you'll stop eating meat. And they push all these wacky vegan policies, too, but that does not give you the bodily autonomy to eat meat, because if you have to pay a tax on that, but you don't have to pay a tax on, say, I don't know, vegan tofu, well, then you don't really have a choice. You have a fake choice. Because they're making it so that you have to pay more for something. They're artificially inflating the market. They're punishing you with government policy. So it's even worse than inflating the market. They're punishing you with government policy because they don't like the choices that you make. And that's exactly what we're seeing right now. 855-839-1210. Bill is in Lower Merion. He'd like to weigh in on AOC's wacky points. Good morning, Bill. Or good afternoon, I should say. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon. I know it's tough. But hey, you know, when she talks about you poor and the lower economic class, she's and their struggles, she's not saying, you know, we can help you find jobs and opportunity. Her solution to that is, we'll help you kill your kids, and that'll get you out of that rut.
Yeah, it's not far off, you know? Right? It's the idea that children are expensive. And that's the other policy they push all the time, is limits on kids. They love the idea to talk about that. They love the idea to talk about, and Bill, thanks for the call, buddy. They're having a little phone issue today. We'll fix it. But They love the idea of saying that there should be population controls, that you should not have children. I mean, there are people that advocate these policies all the time, that you should not be able to have kids. But abortion is an economic issue because if women must give birth, parents are conscripted to work against their will. If women must give birth, they'll be conscripted against their will to work. By the way, I'm working against my will. I don't want to be here. Nobody wants to be at work. I mean, I love my job. I'm kidding. But you know my point. Who doesn't have to go work against their will? Ah, but you think in the mindset of a socialist here. You shouldn't have to work. You shouldn't have to. If you don't want to work, you should not have to work. Why should you have to get up in the morning and go to work? Come on. Come on, man. That's old school thinking here. The new way to think about things is you just get a checkie in the mail. That's all. Why should you have to work? But honestly, aren't essentially we all working kind of against our will? I mean, I would probably, like you, love to not have to go to work. I mean, I love my job. I love to be on the air with you. This is my dream job, and I'm living it thanks to you because you listen. But come on, the couch is a pretty nice place. I could be binge watching Netflix, watching Breaking Bad for the 400th time. I could be home in my pajamas, eating food that just gets shipped to me by the government. I could do all those things, or I can get off my butt and go to work and actually try to make a profit and make society better. But AOC and people of her mindset don't believe that work is actually something you should strive for. And with all these billionaires out there, you shouldn't have to if you don't want to. Women must give birth. If women must give birth, parents are conscripted to work against their will. It's not just women that have kids that have to work against their will. It's people that aren't rich. And there is the problem, because why should Jeff Bezos not have to work and you have to? Why should he be able to be on his yacht every day when you poor schlub, you got to go to work? Well, he earned it. That's why. And also, too, because there's a value in work. Something the left also does not appreciate. There actually is a value in work. Makes you feel good about yourself. I think it gives you a lot of self-esteem. But I'm going to take away that self-esteem right now and ruin your commute when I play you the second part of the AOC clip. Got ahead of it a little bit. Let's have her talking about her birth control, huh? Hey, guys, I know you all want to date her. Remember when she accused everybody of that? She said, people that don't like me just want to date me. They're just jealous. Remember that? It was basically of, oh, you know what it is? You just criticize me because I'm hot. No, we criticize you because you're an idiot, all right? Your looks have nothing to do with it. And I'm not suggesting that AOC is attractive or not attractive because it's irrelevant. I know some people think she is. I think other people think she has horse teeth. I'm just saying, I'm not going there. I'm not going to talk about her appearance like that. It's petty and shallow. So if you think she has horse teeth, keep it to yourself. I'm not going to say that. You know what I mean? That'd be rude. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to play that game. You're not going to get me going down there and talking about her appearance like that. Especially she wears those big, wacky, oversized glasses that make her look like some sort of nurse in, I don't know, a Stephen King movie coming at you down the hallway. Again, I'm not going to talk about her appearance, just her policies. You know why, DeSantis? Because I'm mature. That's why. I've grown up quite a bit in the last several years. All right, here's the second part of this. Go ahead.
Since Republicans are forcing this conversation in uncomfortable ways, then I will meet them to it. I have an IUD. I've had one for years. Now, IUDs, if an IUD fails and results in an ectopic pregnancy, which has about a 50% chance, I believe, of an ectopic pregnancy emerging with an IUD, would that mean that if I were hospitalized in these states, you would have to wait until I was in the process, potentially, of actively dying before you could effectively treat me and save my or anyone in our position's life? I think it's important.
Yeah, and then this is the other lie, too, that they think that Republicans want to kill women. They love saying this, too. But here's the problem with Democrats right now and this whole insistence on discussing abortion and climate change all the time, every day. No one gives a damn. They don't. They just don't care. People are smart enough to know that abortion may be illegal in one state and legal in another state. They're smart enough to figure that out. They can hear the news. And they're also smart enough to figure out that there are way bigger pressing problems than climate change on them. But Democrats can't stop talking about those things because they actually have no policies to advance on their own. The only other policies they want to advance on their own are sexualizing our children in schools. So, you know, it's like one of those welcome to the party, pal moments. USA Today op-ed today. Parents were demonized for demanding schools reopen sooner. Now we know they were right. Yeah, we do know they were right because anybody could have just told you that keeping schools closed during COVID was bad for our kids. Where was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez during that whole period? She was advocating for the policies that keep our children at home. And much like whether it's teaching your kids about sex, whether you want them to learn it or not, or keeping your kids home from school because they don't want your kids in school because COVID, or telling you you got to pay more for meat, or you got to pay more for this, or you can't buy cigarettes to your 21, or you can't buy a gun to your 21. The left is very much about controlling your individual choices, except on one area, and that area being abortion, over and over and over again. But you're smart. You're a mom, you're a dad, you saw what they did to the kids in your school. You saw what they did to your kids, and you know this. And you're not going to forget, and we're not going to forget. Parents are not going to forget. To a mom who even identifies as a pro-choice individual, that birthing person, to that birthing person, because you can't say mom anymore, to that birthing person, it matters a whole lot more now. The kids that she's already birthed, that they are able to go to school and not have to be told what a vulva is in kindergarten, than it does whether or not abortion is legal in her state or the state next door. It's the truth, and it's something Democrats inconveniently don't want to mention. Also, too, nobody needs to know AOC's birth control methods. Nobody. You know what else could be her birth control method? Her face. I'm sorry, that was petty. I'm sorry. Dump that. That was terrible. Her brain? You know what is the ultimate AOC birth control method? Her talking. I mean, come on. How many guys listen to that and go, you know, I'm out. I'm good. Like, they hold the whole conscript thing and they went, ah, no, I'm good. And I'm tapping out, right? You don't need an IUD, lady. You just need to give that same testimony to every guy you ever meet at a bar. You'll be fine. You'll never be a birthing person against your means. Oof. I use an IUD. Gee, thanks. Sorry, it's just a little bit rough on me right there. 855-839-1210. Weigh in on Twitter as well, at Rich Zeoli. Apparently, Biden just announced that he also grew up in Puerto Rico, too, so we'll add that to the list. Thanks to Joan for sending me that way as well. He has lived in a lot of different places, apparently. Mark Wisniewski, also, Mark, I want to thank you for rising to the occasion. He says, you will not hear me saying that AOC has horse teeth. No, sir. Thank you, Mark, for your maturity. I appreciate that, by the way. Thank you very much. So people are certainly being mature today, and I appreciate that. It's going to be a very, very mature program that is above board in every aspect, all right? Don't you worry about that. That's the truth. I do want to play you this clip of very, very important audio on the Supreme Court issue. The Supreme Court is back in session today. They're back in black, and the Supreme Court right now fighting again, as they always do, as Justice Samuel Alito, who wrote the majority opinion in the Dobbs case. This is the case, of course, that did not make abortion illegal, but simply sent the issue back to the states where it belongs. We are a republic form of government. We are a federalist system of government. We are not a democracy. The federal government does not make all the decisions for us. The states created the federal government. And what's not delegated to the states, or to the federal government, I should say, is left to the states and the people. And that's what the Supreme Court did in the Dobbs case. They said, this is not in the federal constitution. This is not an issue for us. This is an issue of grave moral question that invokes religion and science and medicine. And it's something that you, the people, have to figure out. So go figure it out. That's what they said in the Dobbs case. I mean, think about it. The original opinion on Roe was written in the 1970s. The science has changed a lot since the 1970s. We can all agree on that point, at least. Even if you're divided on the issue, the one thing everybody can agree on is that the science of the 1970s, much like the fashion, has changed quite a bit. Everything changes. We've learned a lot more now than we knew even back then. Also, we have now life-saving technologies, techniques. We can able to save babies at 20 weeks old. I mean, they're doing remarkable things on this front. So the point of the Dobbs decision is, hey, states, you go figure it out. And that really is a beautiful model for almost every decision that should be left up to the people, which is the acknowledgement by the Supreme Court in that nine people should not make this decision for 350 million people. But Justice Elena Kagan was not happy about this. She spoke at Salve Regina University in Rhode Island, and she described the difference between a number of different things. So what is this now, DeSantis? We have the audio of, is this the justice? Which justice is this, Kagan?
Yeah, this is Elena Kagan.
All right, take a listen.
In our system, there are many subject matters that present policy issues and that also present legal issues. But the legal issues should be understood as very distinct from the policy issues. So you can think something is really good policy, but it turns out, I mean, just to sort of focus on constitutional law, it turns out that what is good policy is not permitted by the Constitution. Or you can think something is really bad policy, but it is permitted by the Constitution. So if Congress happens to disagree with you on whether it's bad or good policy, a judge has to know her place. And so, there are, I come from the world of law schools, and in the world of law schools, there are plenty of people who say law is politics, politics is law. I think nothing could be further from the truth. I think it's really important that there be a divide between the two. I think a court does best when it keeps to the legal issues, when it doesn't allow personal political views, personal policy views to affect or infect its judging. And the worst moments for the court have been times when judges have allowed that to happen. When, the very worst moments have been time when judges have even essentially reflected one party's or one ideology's set of views in their legal decisions. I mean, that just can't and shouldn't happen.
Yeah, but it's not what happened here. You know what she's talking about. She's obviously talking about the Dobbs decision. But as Justice Alito pushes back on this point, and it's a good thing that he's pushing back on this too, because the Supreme Court is going to have a number of cases before it in the upcoming term. And you know they're going to be a divided court. I mean, that's okay. It's fine to do that. But you got to follow the Constitution. One of the big cases that they are, in fact, going to look at is the idea of using race for admissions. The Students for Fair Admissions versus the President and Fellows of Harvard College. The Supreme Court once again look at whether universities may consider the race of applicants when trying to build diverse student bodies. How do you feel about that? You know what I say? Are we going to be colorblind or not? Are we actually going to judge people based on the merits of how they're feeling, or how they're feeling, the merits on how they are as a student? Or are we going to judge them based on the fact that we want a diversity of color in our academic body? That's the issue before the court. Now, I can tell you, for the Asian students at Harvard who got screwed over in this, who were the most qualified students but got passed over, because Harvard was of this mindset of saying, well, we're going to turn around, we're going to make sure that we put in students of color who are black because we want to have this kind of diversity, and we don't want Asian students. And even though you deserve this seat, you were more likely to be chosen for it if we had just been colorblind at our admissions. We don't care. And the question is whether or not that's going to be legal or not. The Supreme Court justices have taken to publicly bickering lately over these issues, a lot of these issues. And when you've got now Justice Elena Kagan and these other liberals who are going on the court and then bashing their colleagues, well, you understand why guys like Alito have to step up. He recently said, the Wall Street Journal, he said, it goes without saying, everyone is free to express disagreement with our decisions and to criticize our reasoning as they see fit. But saying or implying that the court is becoming an illegitimate institution or questioning our integrity crosses a line. And you know what? That's exactly what the left believes. They believe that if the Supreme Court of the United States of America is not used as a tool to advance the policies of the left, then the court will become irrelevant. Because they want the Supreme Court to be a super legislature that pushes the ideas that they want. So you know what's going to happen. Hopefully the Supreme Court will say it is not okay to use race as your criteria for deciding whether or not a student should be in that school. You should be using whether or not the student should be at that school. We should not be allowing affirmative action because that's racist. They should say that. But, you know, the liberals on the court won't say that. The liberals on the court will disagree. And then what will happen is the Democrats will scream and go crazy. And then you'll hear the cries again. The Supreme Court's going to become illegitimate. The only time the left says the Supreme Court of the United States is illegitimate is when the court is not advancing the leftist policies that they want. And that is the truth. 855-839-1210 is the number. 855-839-1210. The other big issue the Supreme Court of the United States will be tackling will be Creative LLC versus Elenis, whether or not a Colorado designer can tell same-sex couples she will not create a website for their wedding. I think it's very, very simple. You have the right to create a website for anybody you want. I don't want to create a website for a Nazi. I don't want to create a website for somebody who advocates hate. I don't want to create a website for somebody that has this domain. Ziolisucks.com. You know what? Go capture that domain before somebody does, DeSantis. I shouldn't have said that over the air until we saw if it was available on GoDaddy.com. Henry, you got it? Did you get it? Oh, Ziolisucks.com.
We're assuming it doesn't already exist.
Damn it.
I'm just kidding.
Now we gotta buy it ourselves. I shouldn't have to make that website if somebody comes to me, right?
Yeah, you think there's enough people that complain on social media. Somebody would have done it themselves.
But if I was a webmaker and somebody came to me and said, you got to build this website. Oh, great. What's the website called? Ziolisucks.com. I'm like, no, I'm not building that website for you. No. So why can't I refuse service based on lots of different reasons? And one, if I don't want to make a website for a Nazi, why would I? But if I don't want to make a website because I feel like it violates my religious beliefs, and yes, my religious beliefs happen to say that I don't believe in gay marriage, and I'm not saying mine personally, I'm saying in the case of this Colorado case, and I don't want to advocate for this, and so I'm going to ask you to please respectfully go to somebody else or somebody else who can do the job. Why should the government force anybody to engage in commerce that they don't want to be in? That's all. That's the question. I mean, it's a very, very simple question. Do you as a business owner have a choice to make in doing a service, in actively performing a service for somebody? This is not about servicing somebody. This is not about somebody comes into your diner and you have a right to kick them out. That's different. This is actively servicing somebody. In other words, it's Jack Phillips with the cake. Can I be forced to bake a cake and thus participate in the wedding? Can I be forced to make a website? Can I be forced to make wedding invitations? I'm not telling you you can't come in, and Jack Phillips said this all the time back in the day when we had the battle over the cake. I'm not saying you can't come in and buy a cake that we have. You're actively asking me to put my hands into flour and bake a cake for your cause, a cause that I do not agree with, that violates my religious beliefs. I should have the right to opt out of it. So the Supreme Court will finally tackle that, and hopefully they'll give a definitive decision on that, which would be very, very important because they have not done it yet. Even in that decision, which gave Jack Phillips the right to say he will not bake a cake, the Supreme Court was not definitive enough to stop these nonsense suits that keep coming up. Should we do the show open? Yes, we should. I need to break for ID. Oh, that's what you were doing. Henry was doing this thing on his head.
Yeah.
I think you're playing Simon Says.
Top of my head here, top of the hour.
Oh, you see, I'm a little slow on the uptake. All right, so now I know when Henry bats his head, that means we got to take a break.
Yes.
If you smash your head against the glass, what does that mean? I got to do a live read?
Yeah, we'll make that the live read.
You know, in the old days, you say you had a break, you do this, take your hands, you go break like that, like you're breaking something.
Right, but we're not really breaking here. We just need to do the ID.
The ID. So this is ID.
Top of the hour ID here.
Oh, and that is you slapping the top of your head.
Yeah.
Like you're doing some sort of, I don't know, Native American war ritual.
Right. All right. Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right.
Rich Zeoli, weekday afternoons, 3 to 7, Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and on the free Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.